Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for our special Friday show with Lane County Senior Public Health Officer Dr. Patrick Ludtke. I'm KLCC News Director Rachel McDonald. Dr. Ludtke, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
We asked our listeners to leave voicemails and send us emails for this show, and we got a great response. People have a lot of questions about COVID-19. But before we get to those, I want to remind us of where we are. As you just heard in that newscast, the Oregon Health Authority today announced 550 new confirmed and presumptive cases of COVID-19. That's the highest daily case count for the state since the pandemic started. And here in Lane County, we had 69 new positive cases announced today, which brings the total number in Lane County to 2,242. 207 of those are considered infectious. 13 people are hospitalized with COVID-19. And we've had 27 deaths in Lane County related to the virus. Dr. Ludtke, a lot of the new cases recently have been among young people. What's the reason for this?
Well, that's correct. We have seen a significant change. Longtime watchers of this data will remember back in February, March, April, the vast majority of cases were persons linked to cruise ships and certain travel sites, and they were elderly and older. And now we have a majority, as of last week, the first time we broke up to 51% of people under age 30. And that has been increasing slowly for the last several weeks. And basically, people are letting their guard down. And that particular age group, under age 30, are letting their guard down more often than the other groups are.
Now, besides the young people in Lane County, there have been also some outbreaks at workplaces and other public gathering places. We had this question from someone who wants some advice about her workplace.
Hello, my name is Roxanne. My question for Dr. Ludtke is, how can you get your employer to observe COVID precautions in the workplace? There's a lot of resistance to that. People coming into the office won't mask up and deny that masks are required. Some even are insisting that COVID is a hoax, and the supervisor refuses to wear a mask and refuses to social distance. So I would like some tips from Dr. Ludtke about how in the workplace do you navigate this kind of a problem. Thank you.
What do you think? Any advice?
Well, I think it's a very good question. I'm saddened a little bit that she is experiencing that, or someone in her family that she cares about is experiencing such a situation. There are overlapping jurisdictions and responsibilities for workplaces. So what I would say to her first is active discussion with her supervisor, with whoever is in leadership at that particular place of employ. And if that's not helpful, and it sounds like maybe she has done that, then I would suggest sharing the recommendations that are readily available from the Oregon Health Authority. That's our state health department. Strong recommendations with some very clear outlines of what should be done for infection control in various work sites. And early on, we didn't have in-depth recommendations for all sorts of different work sites. Now we have them broken down by a variety of types of work sites. So that's readily available. And then if all that fails, OSHA, the Occupational Safety Health Administration, has oversight for work sites, and that is a place where reporting could occur. And I hope it doesn't come to that. Try the other recommendations first. But if it comes to that, you have a backstop with OSHA.
Thanks so much. I'm sure a lot of people wonder about that. Another question that came up has to do with flu shots.
My name is Lori, and I'm from Florence, Oregon. My question is there any danger in getting a flu shot now and then getting a COVID shot later on when it becomes available within, say, 6 months from the time that you got your flu shot?
What do you think?
Well, I think it's a good question, and what I would say is this. There's no danger getting a flu shot now. Get your flu shot. It's recommended for everybody age 6 months and above. Please do it. Do it now while they're readily available, and we have person available to give those vaccines. Once the COVID vaccine starts to flow, we might have shortages of people who are trying to give flu shots at the same time they're giving COVID vaccine. Secondly, all the COVID vaccines that we are expecting to be approved are dead vaccine. And you could imagine if there were some live vaccines, there could potentially be some other challenges with administration of a different vaccine at the same time as the COVID vaccine. But these are dead vaccines. We don't have any sense that there's going to be a problem 1 month, 2 months, 6 months down the road.
Okay. So it sounds like getting a flu shot is a good idea.
It absolutely is. And again, please do it now.
And here's one from someone else who's just wondering about being in the high-risk category for COVID-19.
My name is Catherine. I'm calling from Florence, Oregon. My question is, Sector 2 of the Oregon Health Authority coronavirus guidelines states, people who are at risk for severe complications, those over age 65 or have some underlying medical conditions, should stay at home, even if they feel well. Dr. Lukey, do you think that those over 65 or with pre-existing conditions should follow this OHA guideline and remain at home as much as possible, given the rise in positive cases and the onset of the flu season? If so, what does Lane Public Health advise workers in this high-risk sector who are forced to report to high-risk job sites or else face job termination? Many of us are facing the risk of survival and the risk of COVID-19.
Well, there's a lot in there, Dr. Lutke. What do you think?
Well, there is a lot in there. I appreciate her eloquence. What I would say is this. There are risks in any activities that we do. And I think as we get older in a high-risk group, perhaps by age, we realize those things. That being said, there are activities with very, very, very little risk. So I would not say stay at home no matter what. I would say choose your activities very carefully. We were on a phone call here, a radio show some months ago, and someone called in and wanted to know if they could go walking alone on the beach in Florence. And they were very nervous, very scared about the ability to become infected out there by themselves. And that risk is almost zero. Now, it's not zero. We'd love to have zero risk, but that's not how life works. So there certainly are activities that have much less risk than others. So I wouldn't say if you are at high risk, you have to stay indoors, period, all the time. Choose your activities wisely. Look very closely at the risk. Get a sense of whether you can actually have safe social distancing or will there be opportunities for bunched up groups of people that could put you at risk further beyond you, the risk you already might have being in a high-risk group. And be very thoughtful in that space. Now, when it comes to work, your employer is required to do an assessment of the risk, follow the OHA guidelines, the Oregon Health Authority guidelines, and help you in that space. And that should be a collaborative conversation between employee and employer.
Thanks for that. We did have a couple emails from listeners, and this one from Therese has to do with the recent civil unrest in our community and in our state and throughout the country, wondering why all the sustained protests do not seem to be associated with a rise in COVID-19 cases. She says it would seem like chanting, protesting, and marching in close proximity could be a perfect way to spread COVID-19, but it doesn't seem to have that effect. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my first thought is, in environmental public health, we have this saying that really comes from factories that make pollution, dilution is the solution to pollution. And that form of response to a manufacturer that makes pollution, typically air pollution, but sometimes water pollution, would be to dilute it out to a level that is no longer toxic to the environment or to animals or humans. And there is no greater dilution when it comes to respiratory viruses than the great outdoors. And these marches, by and large, have taken place outside. And most of them, at least up until we're getting colder now and rainier on the west side of our state, have taken place in the warmth and in the sunshine, and people are outside in that great diluted environment that we have. So their risk is significantly lower than any indoor activity. I think that's number one. Number two, probably many high-risk people who have chosen not to participate didn't get sick, and we didn't find them. And then the last thing I would say is we should remember that across multiple countries, we have learned that this virus will cause asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic in 4 out of 5 people. So it could very well have been that some of those marchers, those protesters, actually did get infected, but it was so mild, they never went to a doctor, a nurse practitioner to be tested, and we never found the case. And we're happy that this virus only causes infections that are notable in 20% or so of people. But don't forget, 4 out of 5 of us will get infected with this and will probably have such a mild infection we never seek health care.
Therese also asked another question having to do with schools. She heard a story on KLCC and NPR on how dangerous it really is for schools to reopen. And there was new research that seems to indicate that schools have not been associated with widespread outbreaks in coronavirus. So what are your thoughts on this? And do you think, I know you're not in charge of the schools here, but, you know, what are your thoughts about the possibility of it being safe to reopen schools?
So I think there is so much work going on in this space. And, you know, our most precious resource really are the kids who are going to take over when we adults move from the stage. And consequently, there's been a lot of work looking at safety across primary, secondary, and tertiary, post-secondary schools. What I would say is we don't know everything we'd like to know. You knew there was going to be a disclaimer on this radio show, and that's a disclaimer. We're still learning about this virus. But some of the things that we do know in the infectious disease space, little ones tend to have less of a risk of severe infection, and they also tend to spread it less to those of us who are at a higher risk. So moving actively to allow kindergarten through third grade, some states are doing fourth or fifth grade, back to school can be very helpful to their futures, getting that socialization, getting that learning going, with minimal infectious risk. As you move into the middle school and high school ages, those of us who have been parents know that behavior can be less predictable and can be more problematic in many different ways. And from an infection control standpoint, that is also true. So that's one side of the equation. But the other side of the equation is it's not just kids in those schools. There are teachers, there are staff members, there are volunteers, there are custodians, there are persons in the cafeterias making food. And I think longtime listeners to this program remember when we had a whooping cough outbreak here just 2 years ago, 2018, we had a fair number of teachers and staff members who themselves were at risk of respiratory conditions like whooping cough, and they really wanted us to keep those schools safe and make sure that unimmunized kids were not in schools because they would put teachers at risk who maybe had leukemia and they were getting chemotherapy. So there are at least a couple populations that we really need to watch carefully, and so far we are doing well. We're not seeing large-scale problems in our schools, and I keep my fingers crossed for that.
Thank you. And we are listening to KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald with Dr. Patrick Ludke from Lane County Public Health. I mentioned earlier that there are 13 people currently hospitalized with COVID-19 in Lane County. Is there any concern over our capacity here if there are any more hospitalizations? And is Lane County accommodating patients from other counties, other states?
So two good questions there. Our hospital system is a referral system. So the Mackenzie Willamette and Peace Health Hospital groups, they do, in fact, get patients from other counties. So, for example, Peace Health routinely gets patients from Coos, Curry, and Douglas, in addition to Lane County and even sometimes Lynn and others. So, yes, small numbers routinely are hospitalized here, both for urgent needs and for elective surgeries. And I will tell you that we work really closely with those two hospital groups. We have what we call a MAG, a medical advisory group, that looks very closely at their ability to deal with the burden that they're enduring right now. That ranges from how many patients are hospitalized, how many are on a ventilator, how many ventilators are available. The two hospitals work together. Their chief medical officers know each other well. We talk quite regularly, actually, and looking at sharing the burden as well. And they have also put together a lot of plans for expansion. Should we really get hit hard, how are we going to take over other wards, put up tents, and have facilities that are allied and outdoors of their current footprint? So I can reassure people, even though I'm not an employee of either one of those hospitals, that a lot of work is going on behind the scenes. And those 13 patients in the hospital right now are really quite far away from hitting their maximum bandwidth.
We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk a little bit about upcoming holidays. This is KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. You're listening to KLCC's Friday show with Lane County Public Health Dr. Patrick Ludke. We're taking your questions about COVID-19. And people are wondering about the upcoming holiday season. Halloween is just about a week away and Thanksgiving is next month. What are safe ways to celebrate? And let's start with Halloween. What about trick-or-treating? Is that recommended or not?
Well, you know, there are various levels of safety that we all need to look at. First and foremost, if you're sick, if you have a respiratory illness, please pull yourself out of that activity, whatever your Halloween activity is. Is it trick-or-treating? Is it a hayride? Whatever it might be, pull yourself out of that so you don't expose others. It'll be a sad time to miss that Halloween for this year, but there will be one in 2021, so please keep that in mind. Second, all of the other recommendations that we have been talking about for months still apply. So if you cannot guarantee while you're outside that you're going to be 6 feet or more away from people, you need to wear a mask. We really want you to focus on that social distancing. We want you to do frequent hand hygiene. Please keep all of those things in mind. And then I think the last thing would be look at the level of risk in those activities. If you're going to do a hayride, people are going to be close together. That's going to be an issue. If you're going to walk through a cornfield, if you're going to pick pumpkins, be very cognizant, be thoughtful about how can I maintain infection control, my personal safety, and the safety of others for those activities. So think about that first before you jump out to do those fun activities that may be part of the tradition of your family.
So it sounds like you're kind of recommending a personal choice sort of approach to this, like what you feel is safe and what you feel is comfortable?
I think so, yes. I think that people can trick-or-treat safely, and they need to be really thoughtful. They need to be in small groups. They need to do that appropriate infection control. And that also applies to the people giving out the candy. So I have seen some really creative ways people are doing it. That so, for example, I saw someone put together an orange pipe and wrapped it with black tape. And that particular pipe is about 6 to 7 feet long, and they slide the candy down the pipe into the trick-or-treater's little bag or their orange plastic pumpkin. So they still get their candy. They get to see the kids. They get to be excited by, you know, those witches and warlocks. But they maintain social distance in a unique and creative way. And there are others who will put their candy out on the porch, and they will watch the children as they go by through glass windows, glass doors. So there are clearly ways to do this safely. I think that not doing it at all is certainly an option if you don't feel like you can be safe, but be really thoughtful, and you can do this.
Okay. Well, we had a question from Jackie who emailed asking about Thanksgiving plans. She says, my husband and I are in our early 60s with no underlying conditions that we know of. Our three children have expressed to us a need and desire to have a family get together for Thanksgiving. They are young adults, wear masks, but live in Portland with roommates, and they've asked if they would refrain from going out to eat and be in any public places for a couple of weeks before or even at the beginning of November, if that would be safe for us, for all of us. And says, I do know none of us would want to wear masks inside of our home, eating and conversing. And she says, my husband and I have been so isolated, only going grocery shopping and getting takeout. We feel we need this. Also, our family needs it, but we want to be safe for all.
So I would say that what I mentioned before for Halloween, the first is if you're sick, remove yourself from whatever it is you're planning to do, whether it's trick-or-treating or Thanksgiving. Remove yourself from that situation for the safety of others. Secondly, and this is equally important, people need to be thoughtful with their own level of risk and really be able to accept what they wish to do. So if you are in a high-risk group, whether it's by age or it's by immunocompromise or whatever it might be, think about this beforehand rather than just reflexively saying, okay, it's November and we're going to have a huge group for Thanksgiving. Then after those two, we really would like people to keep indoor groups less than 10 people. And again, the Thanksgiving meal is probably going to be indoors, so that's much higher risk than trick-or-treating outdoors. Keep that in mind, that level of risk. Keep your dinner party small. If you can make it just the family that perhaps you are with each day, that, of course, would minimize your risk because you've already presumably been exposed to them the last several days if you're living together. And as this caller said, people traveling down from Portland to Lane County, if they can quarantine beforehand, limit their activities, that would likely significantly decrease the risk. It's possible for some. It's not possible for others. People need to live and go to the grocery store and that sort of thing. But just be really thoughtful in the indoor environment You can't wear a mask when you're eating, of course, but all the other activities with the social gatherings before and after, you can maintain social distancing, you can wear a mask when you're talking, so be careful in those spaces. I personally am going to have a small Thanksgiving gathering, going to be doing it carefully. I'm fortunate enough to have a fairly large space that we can be social distanced, and I hope others are able to do the same if their environment allows it.
Okay, and as people are looking to get together with friends, especially this winter, we have a question here from Cynthia in Eugene about bird watching.
This is Cynthia. I'm calling from Eugene. I'm wondering if you could weigh in on a debate among my friends. We like to go bird watching together from cars in the winter. Is it safe for two or three people from different households to ride together in a car for several hours if everyone is wearing a mask? Would windows need to be open, and if so, to what extent? Thank you.
So this has actually been studied pretty extensively by environmental health persons and also by industrial hygienists. And the concern, the worry, is that people can be infected with COVID and asymptomatic but spreading it up to about 48 hours before they develop those symptoms. So you could be in a car, and this caller said two or three people. You could be in a car with someone who actually is infected, and they could be coughing on occasion or just talking, say, look at that beautiful bird, sharing the awe of that particular part of nature, and actually coughing out or talking out some viral particles that could infect others. So the safest way to do that is, again, remove yourself if you have any symptoms of a respiratory infection. Don't go in that car ride bird watching. Number two, everybody accept their level of risk. Be really conscious about thinking about what is my level of risk? Am I immunocompromised? Am I in an elderly group that's higher risk? And then number three, roll your windows down about 3 inches as you're driving around. That will prevent the buildup of those viral particles. If you're sitting in a car for several hours, they absolutely do build up. We have studies to show it that's been tested multiple times by these industrial hygienists. So roll the windows down a few inches, all four of them. Hopefully it won't be 20 degrees outside and you can have your heater on. It'll make a difference. And you will most likely be very safe. Now, there's still a possibility you'll transmit it, but with those interventions in place, you'll be in a much better place than without them.
Okay, but certainly keep a mask, be wearing mask the whole time.
Yes,
okay.
Wear a mask.
Thank you. That's really helpful. And Dr. Lidke, it's been such a pleasure to have you here this afternoon.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks to the community for these questions and for maintaining the health across these challenging times. We need everyone to work together, and this is a time where we can only do it together.
You've been listening to our Friday show with Dr. Patrick Lidke with Lane County Public Health. We had production assistance from Angela Kellner, Mallory Begay, and Jason Brown. I'm KLCC News Director Rachel McDonald. Enjoy your weekend.